taking deep breaths of the cold night air, pulling my shawl about me and flexing my arthritic fingers. I was not usually one for such drama. Before my husband's death, I had been a vicar's wife. I had held hands at funerals and been an ear for all the village's woes. I had lived through the horrors of the Great War and the epidemic that had followed it. I had learnt how to harden myself, to not get upset by things. After all, I had lived with the memory of what had happened on May Day 1912 for 25 years. But seeing the old image flashed across the screen so unexpectedly had caught me off guard. I had been expecting a nice evening out, a special screening of Missensham's past by the Historical Society, a chance to catch up with some of the older parishioners, and an evening away from my lonely cottage. And until Iris had appeared on the screen, it had been so. The evening had begun well. The grey faces had jostled with each other on screen, sending smiles and waves from the past, and the audience had given voices to their silence as they laughed along with them. I'd seen people I had known in my youth, faces forgotten as well as remembered. Buildings that had long since decayed, fashions that had waned, and streets that were empty of cars. There'd been chatter all around me. "Those were the days. Hasn't he changed? She looks just like her daughter did at that age. I remember when that tea shop was a dressmaker's." Then the film had moved on to the May Day preparations. A willow arch propped up against the wall of the blacksmith's yard, and some little girls running around in frothy white dresses. Things had changed when Iris Cordwell appeared on the screen. She was no more than shades of grey cast by the tangled beams of the projector, yet she flickered out of the darkness like a spirit. I could even see her with my eyes shut, the image ghosting purple under my eyelids, a single word echoing round my head. Murdered. I had never liked that word, for it took me to a lonely place, a thicket of witch elms high up on the common land, foxholes nestling in tangles of bare roots and low branches shielding all from view. For a moment, I fancied that I could feel the winds that chilled that place and smell the dampness of the earth.
"Excuse me, Mrs. Ryland?"
But then the thought was gone.
"Mrs. Ryland?"
A man stood in front of me, and from the sound of his voice, I thought that he must have repeated my name several times before I heard him. When I looked up, I recognised his stocky silhouette and dark moustache. He wore an old brown suit and cap, and not his usual sergeant's uniform, but the seriousness of his tone told me that he was now on duty. "Please, call me Agnes," I said, composing myself. "We have been friends long enough, Roy." I looked out into the night. The village green was in darkness. The large oak tree, church, pub, tea room, and doctor's surgery had all faded into the night. The only light coming from the dull blue glow of the police station's lamp, and the bright orbs of the lampposts that mark the road. The door of the church hall cracked open. A stream of people spilled out onto the pavement. They turned to each other, laughed and whispered, but they spoke the same words that I'd heard repeated over and over in the hall. A young man in a bow tie and round spectacles sat on the curb, smoking a cigarette. He held his head in his hands, and I fancied that he was the projectionist, only now aware of the meaning of the film he had shown. We waited in silence until the people had gone, the young projectionist throwing the glowing cinder of his cigarette into the darkness, then hurrying after the crowd.